Hello and welcome to Oscar Mike Radio. My name is Travis, Marine Corps veteran and your host. And this is part three of this series about J.J. Millett, a U.S. Army National Guard veteran in a real situation that affects all veterans, in my view, all veterans, all first responders, all law enforcement. And I'm so pleased to have his aunt Emily with me tonight to talk about JJ and some aspects of the situation. Emily, welcome to Oscar Mike Radio. I am so humbled and honored that you would choose to share with us in this forum tonight.
Thank you very much for having me. I appreciate all the help and you've been giving us and letting everybody know what's been happening with JJ.
Well, JJ is a brother soldier in my view. And, you know, when I have an aunt, a cousin, and a sister coming together to advocate for a fellow soldier brother, it gets my attention. That doesn't happen very often. Aunts are special people. I mean, it's really weird, Emily. I could talk to my aunt about stuff I couldn't talk to my mom to. And, you know, my aunt could, you know, get stuff out of me that, you know, no other woman could sometimes. And so it's really special and kind of cool having an aunt. So I'm kind of curious if you'd start with, what was JJ like growing up? Because, you know, Emily is like, you know, they used to fight like cats and dogs. You know, Elizabeth was like, you know, he was kind of older than me and I really looked up to him, but you saw him from day one. What was that like?
JJ was always a nice kid, always helpful, polite, respectful. I mean, he was probably, for, you know, living locally, he was probably the only boy that lived locally for a nephew. The other nephews lived out of the town. So, but he was just always just a nice kid. Everybody loves JJ. Everybody. I mean, my uncle or my husband's aunt, everybody's like, JJ, JJ, JJ. It's always JJ. He was never in trouble. He was just a good kid.
Yeah, yeah.
That was, you know, it's like he just, you know, he'd stop and he was a quiet boy. You know, he stayed to himself as he got older, but he was just a good all around kid.
What was it like when you found out he was joining the National Guard?
I was happy actually, because living up in Northern Vermont, I thought it was a great thing for him, but I was also worried because knowing he was going to be sent to Afghanistan, that's very dangerous. And Vermont National Guard did lose quite a few. So, you know, I was scared. I know Elizabeth was very scared of him, but we were very proud for him to do that. I mean, serving his country, it's a great thing. I also thought it was great for him to leave that area and see other parts of the world. So I think, you know, it was a good growth experience for him also.
Did you ever see him in uniform?
Yes, he came. I think I did. I know when he came back, like he immediately came and saw Elizabeth. That's when he gave her the stuffed bear with the little uniform on that she still has. I worked a lot back then, so in an accounting firm, so I was always working. So I believe we did, honestly. And back then, the cell service, we're going back quite a few years ago, you know, none of that was around as much, even the internet.
Right, right.
So even trying to, you know, anybody to get in touch with them wasn't easy. I mean, when you go back that many years ago, just talking to somebody, it wasn't easy. But we were always in touch with, you know, his mom or, you know, says, you know, how things were going. But we were very concerned. I mean, he was young. He was 21 years old when he joined.
21. It's hard to believe sometimes, right, that, you know, a 19, 20, 22 yeah. year older has all this responsibility at that stage of their life.
And I think that's the issue. And I think on the flip side, he saw so many things that probably 21 shouldn't see.
Yeah.
And then, you know, he's had the PTSD for years, you know, since. But I mean, he point blank said the more he's done therapy, the more he's probably tried to, you know, just keep covered up because trying to be a man and not really let those emotions get to you.
So did you see any of that when he came back? Because, you know,
we did. I think he was more quiet, a little more quiet, more reserved. I mean, like I said, he was always more of a quiet, but you could definitely see a change. I think a lot of people had the change when they came back. It was different.
Yeah.
I mean, you saw things differently. You acted differently because he saw things nobody should ever see.
Now, as I understand it, you and Elizabeth don't live in Vermont anymore. You all have moved since then.
Right. So we moved 10 years ago, but we keep in contact with JJ. And he's just like one of the ones we've kept in contact with a lot.
Yeah. You know, take me back. You know, you weren't there close because you moved, but take me through what happened in February, if you will, and then kind of transition to the situation now in March where, you know, we're going along here and, you know, he might be facing jail time.
Yes. We obviously, unfortunately, saw on Facebook what was happening. So I immediately reached out to his, you know, sister, so, you know, what was going on. And he had been feeling depressed and had some issues, I'd say early winter, maybe December, and went to the VA or talked to them, and they prescribed a new medication for him. Lo and behold, that medication has some severe side effects. I did some research, and it's a black box warning on that.
Now, what does that mean?
Means it's, I think, it's a severe adverse side effect per the FDA. Likely to cause suicidal thoughts. And also one of the big things was hallucinations. And obviously, you know, after taking the medication for a few weeks, he started hearing voices and having hallucinations and obviously suicidal thoughts.
And that's the crux of the situation.
That's the crux of the situation, which then, you know, that built up to the February 19th, where he had the mental health break. And, you know, he called the hotline for help. And I don't think he had any idea when he called the hotline what was going to happen. You know, he answered the questions. Well, you know, we've read the transcript and he'd be asked a question. He'd answer the question honestly. So unfortunately, a state's attorney is taking his answers as terrorism instead of saying this was a response. Who do you want to hurt? Do I, you know, what do you want to do? And he'd be like, well, I don't want to hurt myself, but the voices are telling me to hurt myself, but I don't want to hurt myself. The voices are telling me to hurt the electric company, but I don't want to hurt anybody. I don't want to do this. So it's, I mean, he really thought he was talking to a helpline, which I guess I would have thought the same thing. That was the purpose of it.
Right. And he talked to the helpline and then it got forwarded to the Vermont State Police.
Right. And that, I mean, we understand that. I think for safety reasons, 100%, sure, you have to do that. And at that point, when the state police got the call, if they thought it was that big of an issue, wouldn't they have gone immediately to find him instead of saying you can turn yourself in? That's what, you know, amazes us.
Well, he turned himself in.
He turned himself in. He drove to the barracks. He said, here's my revolver. He had a revolver. And here it is. He put his hands up and he said, that's it. I mean, so he did nothing wrong. And I mean, the state's attorney saying he had tactical gear. He doesn't even own tactical gear. So it doesn't even make sense. Some of what they're saying about him, he's never owned it. So that's what's frustrating. Cause honestly, he always wrote in a journal for years. Part of the journaling is part of what he's been told for therapy.
It's the first thing you're told to do, start journaling.
Yeah. And he did a lot of writings and a lot of religious writing. He's a man of faith and he writes a lot about scripture. Now, some of the scripture isn't always pleasant and cheery. It can be dark. And that's what and they're using that as saying that's a manifesto. They've renamed it now as a journal. But those are religious writings. And those are just his thoughts at that time. I mean, a lot of us write down thoughts and that's what they're using that against him also.
It just seemed like this could have been a very positive situation where the 988 helpline was used. They got the state police involved. He turned himself in. They got him back into VA care. They redid his medications. And, you know, he's with us still.
Exactly.
Instead, is it the Essex County prosecutor or the state prosecutor?
Is the Orleans County, Vermont, out of Newport, Vermont, state's attorney who led the charge. She has now passed it on to, I believe he's still Essex County prosecutor. For some reason, she did not go to court the last court hearing. She is having Vince Aluzzi do it. We're not sure why. She led the charge and now she's not doing it.
That's odd.
That's very odd. So I don't know what happened. Like I said, we don't know why she's done what she did. And as far as that respect, it's very odd that, you know, she led the charge and estate store. She has a couple others underneath her that has always worked, but no one has seen this Vincelluzzi come in from another county.
Another county?
Yes. Well, at least he was. I'm not 100% sure. He used to be the Essex County. Essex and Orleans County border each other.
What's been the reaction in the community as this gets out there to other people, people who know JJ and your family? What's been the community's reaction to what's happened?
100% positive for JJ. Everybody's upset. Everybody's concerned. Nobody knows why. Nobody knows what. I mean, what? Nobody can even justify it. I mean, we've talked to people, and obviously I've talked to tons of people in the Newport, Derby, Vermont area. We've talked to people outside the area. Nobody can understand why. Even top lawyers can't understand why this has happened. What the reasoning is, because we ask ourselves, and we've asked, I mean, what could he have done differently? Other than harming himself, we don't know what else he could have done. I mean, he did what he was taught to do.
It just, for me personally, it just, we've told veterans for the last 10 years, call for help, call for help, call for help. And my concern is if this goes through, and as I understand it, reading the law, the penalty, the minimum sentencing guideline is 20 years.
That's what we've been told, yes.
So this is not like, okay, we can kind of, no. It's 20 years.
It's a nice slap on the head. This is a huge, forever life changing. He'd be close to 58 when he would get out.
And if this does go through, which, you know, we're trying to make sure it does not, this now sets precedent where if you're a veteran, even in another state, some lawyer is going to grab this and say, well, there's precedence for this. This changes the entire way you would help treat suicidations, don't you think?
100%. That's one of the issues we're speaking out, not only for JJ, but for all veterans, because this is not a precedent that can be set. I mean, people are calling this hotline, and we don't want to stop calling a hotline, but they're calling it for help. I mean, we want to save lives. We don't want, and we also want this to happen to anybody else, though, because the mental toll it's taking on JJ, it's very hard to recover to begin with when you're facing such a charge. So he can't even barely recover because of this charge. And secondly, the monetary, he can't work.
Right.
He's got no income coming in. So Right. It's like his life is on hold right now.
So for people outside of the Derby, Vermont area, as an aunt, what do you want people to know about JJ, the man, the family member, your nephew, Emily?
He is just a wonderful person who would never hurt anybody. He would do anything for anybody. This is not, I mean, he had a mental health break. This is not, JJ would not hurt anybody. I mean, this was an unfortunate thing that happened. And we just want, I mean, he's just a great guy whose now life is sort of in limbo until these charges are resolved.
And correct me if I'm wrong here, as I understand it, he never had any prior convictions at all.
No, he was a correctional officer, right? For years.
He wasn't on any domestic terror watch list at all.
No.
So there's no history of violence, intent to commit harm, nothing, right?
Nope. He doesn't even know if he ever had a speeding ticket. Literally, he's like, I built that, nothing. I mean, he was going back to, he was starting school. He was, you know, just about to finish up his degree in behavioral science.
Oh, wow.
But that's obviously been put on hold. So he was hoping to really, you know, maybe become a social worker or something. He had, I mean, all these plans now, and obviously everything's on hold.
I mean, in a perfect world, what would be the outcome that you all are seeking for JJ at this point?
I mean, all of us would like the charges dropped and an apology made. I mean, nothing. I mean, the charges, we want them dropped. I mean, we just want the charges dropped so he can proceed with his life and continue on with his education. He's great with people and great with children, so he'd be a great youth mentor. And I mean, that's what he was also doing before. I mean, he's just a great, you know, he has great patience with it, and he's really great at the job. Obviously, he was a great correctional officer. We had many if we had some former inmates reach out to us, or maybe current inmates, I don't know, saying what a great guy he was and, you know, how respectful he was as a correctional officer. You don't see that often.
Right. No, no, you don't.
So, I mean, that's just the type of person JJ is.
The next question I get asked is, you know, I get asked, well, what kind of guy was he? And I'm like, well, talking to his sister, cousin, and now his aunt, I would say that, you know, he was loved by his family, loved by his, you know, sibling and cousin and aunt, and then, you know, really a solid guy in the community. After I answer it that way, the next question I'm asked is, well, okay, what can we, because I got people in Texas, Florida, other across the nation starting to learn more about this. What can we do to help, Emily?
We need to get this out there. Publicity. Just need to keep pressing the issue. We need people to call or write to the Orleans County State's Attorney Office in Newport, Vermont. I've got the number and address if they need that. They need to be told to drop all these charges. The pressure has to be on them to know that America is watching, not just Newport, Vermont, Derby, but America is watching this.
If you give me the phone number and address, I will put that in the Oscar Mike Radio show post what to do, and I will call this week myself and send a letter.
Because I know at the beginning they were getting so many calls a day, they were like beside themselves because they couldn't even get any work done because they were getting call after call. But we need, this is not just a JJ issue. This is a national issue. I mean, this is.
I agree with you. And people say, well, you're just, you know, being, you're getting excited over this. I said, well, what happens if this establishes precedent and you're in another state and some lawyer says, well, you know, this was said in a counseling session. This was said in an argument. And now we want to, you know, escalate this to the charge of domestic terrorism. That could happen, right?
That's exactly, that's the whole thing. I mean, we've seen it happen to JJ. I mean, somebody says these things, they drive up to the police barracks, nothing happened, nobody was hurt, and we've seen it happen. And I mean, the right thing, I mean, she could have dropped the charges, the judge could have dropped the charges. Nothing's happened, even though the judge sort of has said, I'm not sure how the prosecution's going to win the case. Well, it doesn't matter, because even if it goes to trial, you never know. But secondly, JJ's life is on hold, not to mention the money we've got to try to raise for an attorney.
I was going to ask about that. Is there a fundraiser to help raise money for his?
That's what we're looking at, because I think we're going to have to get some additional legal counsel going. So that's what we're trying to look at right now.
Okay.
How we're going to be doing that, because obviously it's extremely expensive. I mean, he can't work. So, I mean, that's a huge cost that, you know, he never would have expected in his life to be facing.
No one does. So give me the address and phone number. I will put that in the show post.
Okay.
I can tell you that people across the nation are watching, you know, these conversations do, you know, connect with people, and they can't believe it's happening, one. And then two, it's like, well, if you can't call a 98 helpline, what are you going to do? We're going to have more dead veterans.
That's exactly the concern, because if JJ hadn't called that afternoon, or that, I'm not sure, afternoon, what, he probably would not be alive.
So
that's the opposite. I mean, that's what would have happened.
So listen, there's going to be more coming about this, ladies and gentlemen. You're going to have the address and phone number in the Oscar Mike Radio show post. I'm going to call and write a letter. We can amplify this and help out this family. You know, I just want JJ to know that he's not alone. I know it must feel like he is by himself, but there's people that he's never met before that care very deeply about him, Emily.
Yeah, I think that's what he needs to know. He's having a tough time, so.
This is not the last time we're going to talk, ladies and gentlemen. We're going to keep this going every week and amplify the message for this family, for this soldier. Emily, I want to thank you for coming on. Again, it's when you have an aunt and a cousin and a sister banding together, it gets people's attention. And I wish there were more aunts like you.
I really appreciate you even listening to us, because it's been a tough battle for the last few weeks. So I really appreciate you reaching out and making this a...
You sent me that email and just said, hey, and here we are. So
I appreciate it very much. Thank you.
No problem at all. I'm Travis, with the host of Oscar Mike Radio. I'm with Emily Wheeler. She is JJ Millett's aunt and talking on his behalf. You can help. You can help very easily. We need his help so he can get on with his life. Emily, we'll be talking soon again. I'm Travis. We're Mission in Flight.
Thank you.